from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in ancient Rome. In the theater, a character archetype emerged as a kind of unkempt fool, a source for laughs, but also a source of mischief, sometimes suspicion. And later, Shakespeare would elevate this character type in Othello and The Winter's Tale. You might call these the earliest clowns, but clowns are more often given their historical roots with a performer named Joseph Grimaldi, who created the well-known white face clown makeup. That was the early 1800s in Great Britain, and he gained such fame in London that clowns were occasionally referred to as Joeys. Even Grimaldi's clowns would occasionally carry a kind of inner sadness and contradiction. So why exactly do many people find clowns to be something to fear? The term coulrophobia is a neologism coined to describe a fear of clowns, although it's not widely accepted in psychological practice yet. But fear of clowns is very real, and many fiction writers have employed this to arouse their audiences. The movie adaptation of Stephen King's It just broke a September box office record with the Swedish actor Bill Skarsgård playing Pennywise the Dancing Clown, who terrorizes young children before eating them. This is all unfair to clowns, isn't it? Most clowns do not eat kids. How do they feel about Pennywise and the Joker and so many other negative portrayals? Can they get us all to calm down about it? Calm down about clowns? Maybe appreciate what clowns bring to a performance? This hour, we are going to discuss fear, reality, and there is science behind this. If you understand the science about why, if you happen to find clowns creepy, there is science, and that may help you break that down a little bit. So we'll get there. My guests are essentially the farthest thing from creepy you can get. I will say hello to Richard Hewson. He's a member of Flower City Vaudeville and still performs, does some clowning. Is that the verb?
Yeah.
Okay, does some clowning, but does not do clowning in whiteface anymore?
Nah.
How come?
Not at all. It expanded my audience. I found that the little children weren't worried about what I was or who I was. Teenagers didn't see me as being too immature for them. And adults said, you remind me of Red Skelton. So, boop, that stuff goes gone.
Okay, well, that's Richard Hewson. Also here is Roscoe the Court Jester, who does, in fact, perform in, but is not right now. You can't see Roscoe, but he's just like a normal guy.
Normal? I would be questionable about that.
Okay, that's fair. Maybe not nice to have you, though, Roscoe.
I'm glad to be here, Evan.
It's great to have you. Sky Sands is a comedian. He's an entertainer. You have seen Sky in many venues. And by the way, we'll make sure you know where everybody is performing before the end of the hour, once you find them all endearing. But you put the red nose on.
Yeah, I had to. It's a rule.
You have a red nose in person. He also has a mini red nose for his driver's license, which is weird but effective, you said?
It does work. It does.
It does work in what?
Well, I bring the nose wherever I go. I mean, it's kind of fun. It just lightens people up. I've been doing this for over 30 years. I was in line, and the woman said at the airport, can I see some picture ID? So I took out my picture with my clown nose that's on my license, and then I put my nose on quickly as I turned my head and said, hi, do we match? And I showed it to her, and she just looked total stone-faced and said, excuse me. And she goes in the back, and she comes back up, and my wife is irate. She's like, I can't believe you're doing this. Don't be funny around me. And she said, I think you're going to be satisfied with your flight. You're both going to be on first class from here to L.A.
Come on.
She said, my boss saw you on the monitor, thinks it's funny, and cool. Thanks for lightening up the day. So it just, you know, it's being funny without being overly over the top, without, you know.
Okay.
It's an excuse. If I cut you off and I'm wearing total clown face, no disrespect, you're going to maybe get mad at me. You know, well, no one gets mad at a clown. If I'm just wearing a clown nose and I look at you like, sorry, all you got to do is think, gee, oh my God, go ahead, drive.
Or get in first class, I guess.
Well, that all the time. I've gotten stopped by police officers, and I say, you know, my license.
Oh, my gosh. That's Sky Sands, and Abby DeVeist is here. Abby is also involved in local comedy. She's a local improviser. She's taught improvisation, and she, until recently, had coulrophobia, a fear of clowns. So,
yes.
So let's go back before you got over this fear. How bad was the fear of clowns?
It was pretty bad. I could be in a distance to them, but if they got up close to me, I'd hide, if I'm honest.
Roscoe, stay back. Yeah. Stay back in the
this table's okay.
All right, but this
Don't run.
But this is what absolutely makes no sense at all. I mean, like, we're going to talk about the science and the psychology here, but this is not going to make any sense. How did you get over your fear of clowns?
I decided to go see the new movie It.
Which is exactly what is causing fear of clowns.
Yeah.
Why did that get you over your fear of clowns?
Well, the original movie is what gave me my fear of clowns when I was a child.
The TV
yes,
version, yeah.
I went downstairs when I was supposed to be in bed and I watched it, you know, behind the couch. And my dad was watching it. My mother was not, just so you all know. But, and I was terrified and it kind of really hit me on a visceral level. So I've been scared ever since. And I enjoy clowning in theater. I do it myself. And I felt like I needed to get over that. And the only way to do it was to bring my adult brain to the movies and watch a terrifying clown movie.
This is a little too meta for me, because one of the premises of the movie It is that this monster preys on your fear. And
yeah.
If you get over the fear, it takes the power away, which is what you did in real life.
Yes.
And now I'm feeling like I'm actually in a film.
Yeah.
But let's listen to some of what let's listen to some of what freaked Abby out with the initial. Now, I don't have Bill Skarsgård because I didn't get the release to the rights, and I don't want to be sued by a kid eating clown. But I do have Tim Curry, who played Pennywise for the TV version. And this is Tim Curry's scene with Georgie, the iconic scene where the little boy's paper boat goes into the drain and he's surprised to see a clown waiting there. Let's listen to the scene.
Oh, come on, bucko. Don't you want a balloon?
Supposed to take stuff from strangers. My dad said so.
Very wise of your dad, Georgie. Very wise indeed. I, Georgie, am Pennywise, the dancing clown. You are Georgie. So now we know each other. See, right?
I guess so. I gotta go.
Go? Without this?
My toes!
Exactly. Go on, kiddo. Take it. Oh. You want it, don't you, Georgie? Oh, of course you do. And there's cotton candy and fries and all sorts of surprises down here. And balloons, too. All colors.
Do they float?
Oh, yes. They float.
Okay, so I'm scared. That's why Abby was freaked out as a child. And I'm told that Bill Skarsgård's Pennywise is even more frightening.
Yes.
So why did the... I still can't quite grasp why that actually worked for you to watch this together. You should go watch Richard or Sky or Roscoe to get over it. Not like the modern
Pennywise.
That did
help. I mean, that as through my life, I still saw clowns, and that has helped. But, you know, the actual watching of the movie was a terrifying experience for me. I had a few moments where, like, my friend said I looked like I blacked out and reset. But, the kids along the way are discovering, like, you can't hurt me if I'm not scared of you. And I was like, yeah, that's fair. That's true in most things in life, you know, if you meet it head on. It's less scary.
Mm-hmm.
So
it worked.
I just convinced myself not to be scared anymore.
Now, Richard, do films like that, do portrayals like that hurt your profession? How do you feel about those?
Well, good. Thank you. Let's take a broader view of what clowning is, right?
Yeah.
Clowning has occurred in every culture on Earth. There's a social purpose for it, right? And the Will Rogers was wonderful in our time. Joseph Grimaldi that you mentioned. And now one of the beautiful things that can happen with clowning is the healing aspects of it. If you talk to anyone who's been involved in hospital clowning, they'll have stories that appear to be miraculous to you. Can I tell you one?
Absolutely.
All right. My friend Cindy Pelk is Crystal the Clown. One of her first hospital experiences, walking into a room, there's a little boy laying there on the bed, the mother sitting on the other side reading a book, and the mother nods like it's okay to come in. She comes in, and the boy's not paying much attention to her, but she's clowning around, and she's bright and cheerful and, you know, all the thrills and everything of a girl clown. And the little boy eventually looks at her, then he smiles, then he starts to giggle at something she said, and the mother drops the book and runs out of the room. Crystal, she just keeps on playing around because, like, what else can you do? And a moment later, the nurse runs in and the mother behind and another nurse, and the mother is bawling her eyes out. And Crystal's like, well, I'll just keep doing what I got to do. Finally, one of the second nurse leads her back outside and says, did you see that? She says, what? What happened? He's been in a coma for a week. He came out to play with the clown.
Wow.
And there's just stories like that all over the place. If you hear enough of them, you think that hospital clowning should be a requirement in a hospital.
How often do you experience that personally, Richard?
I don't get a chance to hospital clown. There's a lot of politics in hospitals.
Oh, there are? Okay.
Right. But I have done hospital clowning, and it can tear your heart out or it can make your day. You know, to a woman lying in bed waiting to die, and her big, tough Italian family is sitting around her, these big macho guys, and you walk in and you start playing with her and asking her to be my girlfriend, or you just make stuff up on the moment. And as long as you are giving outwardly for them, it works. Pretty soon these guys are walking out into the hall, and they had been sitting there absolutely stone-faced with her trying to find nothing to do, waiting to die. Pretty soon, she's laughing. They come back in, tears streaming down their eyes. They had to go outside to cry. They finally had that emotional release. By the time I left the room, they were all talking to each other and enjoying the last moments of their mother's life. These things happen more than I could explain stories from.
You're making it really hard to not like clowns, man.
Exactly. There was a woman at the old baseball stadium. I was leaving an event, and I was headed to my van, and out of the corner of my eye, spot this woman. And she is large. She is huge. She overfills her wheelchair in the same way that disgust overfills her face. She's not having a happy life. And I'm in full clown. I notice her. I walk straight towards her, and that moment before she turns her head away, which means I don't want you, just before I stop. And that gets her attention. Why did I stop? And I reach up, and I had a palm squeaker in my hand, which slips inside a glove. You push it with your fingers, and so when you point to something and push on it, you can make a squeaking sound. I reached up, and I squeaked my nose with it. And she looks at me like, what? Like, what a fool this could be. And I point to her like, does your nose squeak? And she's face contorts into this, what? What are you talking about? I reach over and I touch her nose and it squeaked. She melted, absolutely melted, laughed and carried on. My job is done and away I went. I changed her day in that moment that quickly. And how do you do that with any other profession?
Well, those are beautiful stories, and I am curious to know then, is it a bummer to see films like this, to see portrayals like this, or do you think that's okay, that's fiction, that's fun, you know?
Well, after looking at all that what clowning can be, how do you think it affects clowning? How does it serve society?
So it hurts you.
It doesn't really hurt me, but I'm disappointed in it, right? And again, it'll pass. You know, there may be more of them, but these things happen and they come and go. But are they a help to society, or are they like the hospital clowning can be, or is it just something to do for a paycheck? You know, he's making a lot of money off of this.
Stephen King, call the show, man. You're getting called out. Roscoe, how do you feel about why don't you kind of, I'd like all of you to kind of weigh in the same way Richard did. How do you feel about this portrayal, and how do you think that contrasts to the work that you
did? Well, I always, with the portrayal of the old movie It and last year's Clown Scare and the current movie It, I always say is give us a challenge, okay? Because our job as professional clowns is to take the business back, okay? Because, again, and a lot of people do not like clowns right now because of the fear factor and all that kind of thing. But many times I say, we're going to keep the business going, and it's up to the good clowns to keep it going. And I've been at the Rochester Red Wings for 25 years, okay? And I experienced a lot of kids that are afraid of me, but they become my projects. Okay, when you're afraid of me, you're going to like me before you leave my area. And I work on them. I keep them, like Richard says, you know, have a real soft approach to them. Keep your voice soft. And I don't use the white face anymore. I only use a couple shows that I do the white, full white face, but I use more what they call European style, which is just a little markings and all that kind of stuff. But I don't want to give up the clowning, because if you give up the clowning, then you give it into the scary part of it, okay? Like last year, I went down to Norwich, New York, which is just north of Binghamton, and they were doing a pumpkin festival, and they were having a parade. And the organizer of the parade said, you want to walk the parade as a clown, or do you want to just walk it as a normal person? I said, first thing, Roscoe is not a normal person, okay? He likes to bring laughter to people. And so what we basically do is, I said, I'm going to do the parade in full makeup with a European style, and everybody loved it, okay? There was just a few people that was afraid of clowns, but again, it's up to us professional clowns to keep the clowning industry going. Otherwise, it could go away because of the movie industry, okay? To go on Richard's thing, I am a Damascus Shriners. Okay, you guys
you're a what?
Damascus Shriners, the guys that have the fez and all that kind of stuff. And up until a couple years ago, we used to have the Shrine Circus, which most people in the Rochester area has attended the Shrine Circus. And that is a fantastic place to introduce the kids to clowns. And I instructed our clowns to be really careful on getting, in the old days, in the 60s and 70s, 80s, clowns would get into your face.
That's okay. They're calling Roscoe to book a gig right now. You're not the first whose phone is running, Roscoe. That's all right. Go ahead.
Okay. So basically, I instructed our clowns to always be careful. And one thing all our entertainers here will realize is kids have space. And you let the kids come into your space, you don't go into the kids' space. When you go into kids' space, they get afraid of you, okay? And even as adults, if a person come into your space, they get afraid of you. So you learn how to work with kids and how to ease into the clowning to their life. And my goal is make you my best friend when I leave. And many times I've heard, I don't like clowns, but I like you, Roscoe.
You've turned them.
I won.
Sky, how do you feel about all this?
I feel good. I knew that I would. I'm a clown. I am a clown. I mean, for real, when people talk to me, even in everyday life, they say like I'm a clown without the makeup. And I like that a lot because I've been compared to Ernie Kovacs or Red Skelton. What a review. That was. I felt really nice about it. I wear the nose. See, clowns are, first of all, scary. There's so much to go over. Scary or not, we believe, we remember what we last see and what we're programmed to see. So if we're seeing all these scary clowns, if kids see this, then of course they're going to think kids. If kids saw, like, for instance, nothing but scary dinosaurs, really scary dinosaurs tearing up kids, then perhaps, you know, Barney or lovable dinosaurs wouldn't be popular. You never saw that in any of the Jurassic Park movies. There were some adults. Kids were never attacked. It wasn't an affront to children. Parents also.
That's a good point.
Well, and parents don't. They program their kids. A child will wait to see a clown. It's fine. They can't wait. The same thing with Santa Claus. And I've portrayed. Anyway. Because there is such a thing. I don't even go there. Anyway, parents will wait in line. At the last second, they'll say, now, don't be afraid. Now, hold on. The kid was not afraid up to the whole time. They've been waiting to get a balloon. They've been waiting to play with the clown. All of a sudden, they say, afraid. And why? Should I be afraid? Should I be afraid? What's going on? What the heck is going on?
I don't know. Oh, Roscoe, throw the phone away.
Put the phone away.
Roscoe, if it rings again, I've got to throw it out the window, man.
Wow, yeah, I'll show you all the pratfall. But it's important. I think, like it was said, I don't wear makeup anymore on stage as a clown. I will sometimes wear very, very minimal markings. I always have a nose with me because you can act. I think a clown can act silly and not necessarily have to have the makeup anymore. I think we've evolved. I think our clowning in our society, and also it's because it's a talent. People don't realize you just don't put on, and that's what you see like on Living Color and other shows where they show the clown as a buffoon who doesn't know what to do. Clowning is a talent. Clowning is psychological. I mean, I actually went to a clown school where I learned lots of nuances and had to take courses. And it's a give and a take. It's a dance.
What's an example of something that you could learn at clown school that someone who might think that they're funny or think that I'm a class clown, therefore I'm funny, wouldn't have the training to fully understand like you?
How to approach a person. Either how to approach a person and how to do it the right way, whether you play shy or whether you play, you make believe you have something in your hand and you give it to them, or even as much, and this is so important, and we should be doing this every day, every single one of you listening, when someone is in a wheelchair, they are not invisible. They can see you. So instead of make-believing like they're not there, do kneel down. Say hello. When I say hi to a child, I don't just bend over and shake their hand and so it makes for a good photo op. I get down on my knee. You know, you want to be, but not on their face. It depends if they want to meet you, then it's fine. But I always get on my knee. I always get down on a level with someone in wheelchairs because they always have to look up. You know, and we don't. So it's nice to be on their level. I mean, the little nuances, the touch, an older person. And in today's day and age, you can't even touch. I can't touch a kid when I do a kid show. I'm not supposed to touch a child. I put my hand on his shoulder to move him closer to be in the shot. And I've gotten reprimanded by the library system. You can't touch a child. It's that crazy. But with a senior, I don't care. I walk right over. I always put my hand on a senior's shoulder, touch them because they don't get a touch. Doctors touch them, nurses touch them, but who ever touches somebody in a senior living facility, you know, with love? So it's always, and again, it's respect. There's always respect, but it's a talent. It's not just putting on the outfit and acting silly. It's a character. When I played the Mick Clown for the Mick restaurant chain.
Again, we don't want to get sued.
Right. I can't discuss what the name of the clown was. Ronald. The whole name I couldn't say. When I played a clown for a Mick restaurant chain, I realized I wasn't just a clown. I was an actor portraying the role of a clown. And that's different because that's an established character. But that character, there were such fine nuances and such detail that you had to follow. I see things like It, Killer Clowns from Outer Space. There was a campy movie that came out with that. Well, first of all, kids shouldn't be seeing these movies. The kids that are digging the clowns. The
but
kids,
it's adults who see them and walk out and say, I can't do it. I can't do the clown thing.
Well, you know what? Then, okay, then they can't and they shouldn't. And
But it doesn't bother you? Like movies like It?
No, it's entertainment. You know, I am a possibilitarian, and anything is possible, and I have a good imagination. It's a horror film. It's a dichotomy. You want to be entertained, but you don't want to be scared. But you do want to be scared, because being scared in a movie and in an amusement park is the best thing, because you can feel like you're about something's going to terrible happen, but you know it's not. You're still safe. So it's that safe scared. So for that, I don't care. You know, that's fine. If an adult says, well, I don't like clowns. I say, well, I know I don't like accountants. Hey, boy, I tell you, doesn't it give you the willy sometimes? And they say, well, that's ridiculous. Why wouldn't you like an accountant? Well, why wouldn't you like a clown? But I don't question them. It's not for me to question. I just go with the flow.
Well, first of all, that's a really good line. I like that line. But second of all, after our only break of the hour, we are going to get to the science behind why people might be more likely to say, boy, I really don't like clowns versus I don't like accountants, and then how we're going to work that out, because there is a psychology here that I did not know about that I think is interesting, but we're going to work that out. You can't all do what Abby did, which is go to It and think it's going to fix you. It's probably going to make it worse.
There was that possibility.
That was smart, though. That was one of the best ways to do it.
Extremely brave.
Sure.
All right, so let's take our only break of the hour, and listeners, I want to hear from you. This is a great chance for you to hear from three people who are avid and professional clowns. I want to say clowns, but I mean, they don't just clown, but, well, Roscoe, that's what you do, Roscoe the Court Jester, right?
Well, I'm a clown, but I'm also an entertainer.
See, that. Thank you. I don't want to besmirch the rest of the work that you do. They're all entertainers, and they've all done clowning professionally. Abby DeVeist is over her fear, and I want to hear from you. How do you feel about clowns? 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free. 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. After this break, we're going to get into the science of it, and we're going to see what you think about that. Now, let me tell you what's coming up Monday on the next Connections. There's less than a month before Election Day. We'll talk to candidates for Rochester City Council about their vision for our city. We've heard from the Democrats, and now we'll hear from candidates on other party lines. Then in our second hour, we discuss the allegations against Harvey Weinstein and power dynamics in the workplace. That's all coming up Monday on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and we are talking about clowns and our fear of clowns. It, the movie, set September box office records. It's not helping the clown industry, but it's certainly making a lot of money. But that's not the first film or piece of fiction that portrays clowns in this way. And we're talking to Sky Sands, who's a comedian, entertainer, has done clowning. Occasionally you will see him just wearing a red nose. Richard Hewson's a member of Flower City Vaudeville. Roscoe the Court Jester's here, who you've seen, among other places, at Red Wings games for, what, 25 years?
25 years.
25 years now. And Abby DeVeist is a local improviser and improv coach and actor and has gotten over her fear of clowns. So I'll read some of your thoughts in a minute, but let's talk about some of where the psychology is. And it's something called the uncanny valley. Now, this is a concept I hadn't really heard about until recently, but it's kind of the gap between what we know to be real and what looks almost real but isn't quite. That can scare us when you see something that is kind of approximate but also a little off. Here's the host of a podcast on why we fear clowns. It's published by Dorkly Online, and we're going to hear them talk a little bit about the uncanny valley and the science behind our fears.
Let's leapfrog Freud and his definition of the uncanny and jump straight to something that's been getting a lot of play lately, the uncanny valley.
Coined by robotics professor Masahiro Mori in 1970, the term refers to the response of revulsion towards something that approaches familiarity but falls just short, which inspires a feeling of unease and displeasure. You most likely associate this with robots or bad CG or Nicolas Cage's acting, but it certainly applies to clowns, whose makeup pushes them outside the bounds of familiar human identity. While some of this has to do with the hair, the noses, the big shoes, the biggest effect comes from the frozen, painted-on expression. Similar to observing a wax figure or one of those mind-bogglingly expensive realistic sex dolls, the human mind processes the smile of the clown as a broken mechanism of emotion, something that's unwell or incorrect for its inability to change.
All right, so that's the uncanny valley, and that's this idea that clowns are almost real but not quite. Like, what was the film? The Polar Express, you know, Tom Hanks' film, kind of weirded me out a little because it was mostly real but kind of not. And I'm curious to know, Abby, if that resonates with you. Do you think there's something to that psychological effect with whether it's a clown or a robot that looks real or something like that that kind of throws us off and makes us feel uneasy?
Oh, definitely. Because I was such a small child when I first saw the original movie, I don't think I was capable of separating the concept of clown from the monster that was eating people. So as I got older and I tried to talk myself out of having a clown fear, I would still be put at pause when I'd be like, why do they have to paint smiles on their faces? Why can't they just be happy themselves? And, you know, that kind of thing would kind of play with my mind a little bit, I guess.
And do you think then, listening to our guests here talk about how they don't go in full clown face generally anymore, if that can lessen some of that?
Oh, definitely. I mean, European clowning has always kind of been a different view, in my opinion, when I've been watching things with a fear of clowns. But it's also different when you're on screen and you can't interact with that clown, or if you're in person with them. And I think that has a big impact, too.
All right, Richard, how do you feel about what you heard about the uncanny valley and that kind of that close to real but not quite that scares us?
That explains what happened to me at a festival one time. I was clowning in full clown, walked up to a tent to just to get something to drink. And the two of the girls stopped me and said, "Don't come close, don't come close. She's scared of clowns." And this one girl was standing way back. And I said, "Okay, I just want something to drink. I'll pay for it," and da-da-da. And as we talked, she calmed down. She's the one who handed me the drink, the bit of water for me. And I said, "Thank you very much. Could I make a balloon for you?" And she says, "It's gonna be scary." "No, it's just a heart balloon." See, I pull it out. It looks like a heart when it's uninflated. When I blow it up, it'll just be a heart in three dimensions. Would that be okay? She said, "Yes." So I blow it up, and of course, being an entertainer, a clown, fool, I pushed it one little step too far. As I tied the knot, I pretended I couldn't get it off my finger. In her mind, that balloon came to life and wouldn't let go of me. And she freaked after being really, really fine. She, "Oh!" and went right to the back of the tent. Just about went through it. I was like, okay, some people are very, very touchy about this. So
the psychology, okay, so...
So that was what she was doing. Yeah. It was a little, not quite real, too real.
Something a little off. Roscoe, what do you think?
And I seen the same thing with also performing at the circus and all that kind of stuff. The kids think that we're this... big scary person, and that we're unapproachable, or we get in the kid's face and all that kind of stuff. When we start showing the personal thing that they were gentle with the kids, and we just basically are there to make them laugh and all and everything like that. My biggest story is I had a great niece that when she saw me in white face makeup and all that kind of stuff, she would go screaming to her mom. This is my great niece. Okay, how I got her over the fear was. I had her watch me put the makeup on and take the makeup off.
So she could see you're just a regular guy.
I'm a regular guy, and that's what I tell people is when they're afraid of me, I'm just a normal guy that just put makeup on a little bit more than your mom does, and I'm here to make you laugh, okay? And that's the key thing. We're not here, we're just actors putting makeup on to make you laugh and make you feel good for a few minutes.
I mean, you wear less makeup than Adam Chodak. Yours is just white colored. Adam's is bronzer. And so I can attest, having worked in commercial television news for a while, it's a lot of makeup. So interesting to see that her perception changes when she saw the process.
Yeah, she saw that, wait a minute, this Roscoe guy is my uncle, okay? And my uncle is totally crazy like a clown, but he just has, when he's Roscoe, he has the makeup on, and I should not be afraid of him.
Okay, Sky?
Clowns should be funny, I believe, but they're not only for the laughs. You know, we accomplish so much more, like you talked about when we were in hospitals. My goal is to cause some kind of emotion that's positive or touching. Yes. It can be sad. But then you're sad with me. And if you're sad with me, now all of a sudden you feel empathy for me. So now all of a sudden you're comforting me, the clown.
You're making a connection with
me. There you go. Yeah. I like that word, connections.
Connection, yes.
You know, that's a good word for connect.
Be on this show with, especially.
So that's one thing. And I had something else you're telling me people, the balloon got stuck on your finger and she started to scream. You got to remember, these people can drive a car home. I mean, that's kind of crazy here.
She was 18.
I'm saying, these are people with issues.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
So, these are the same people that are scared of a napkin. There's no winning them over. But I do think, here we go, a black man sees a white person for the first time in his life. How does he act? Normally, I don't think he's going to be scared. I think he's going to be curious. And a white man sees a black man for the first time. And what if one of us sees a green person? I mean, you'd almost tilt your head a little bit and wonder. And then the curiosity and the human in me would want to meet that person. It's like if you see a monkey who is uncertain of something that's put in the cage. Maybe it's a fake toy or a doll. And it depends also, I mean, they don't have the luggage that goes, the baggage that goes with, like a clown, real quick, in Poltergeist, the doll that scared the kid. Well, that was a scary looking doll.
Yeah.
You don't even have to call that
definitely.
A clown. You know,
it's
because
terrifying.
It had the legs and the feet that looked like the Wicked Witch of the West.
Yeah.
It had the pointy shoes, and it wasn't right, okay? So there you're making something ugly, and you just happen to say it's a clown. There's also different faces that we have as clowns. Some clowns know how to put on a face. Every face is different. Every face is unique. There are wrong ways to put on a face. If you looked at Gacy, that terrible clown that killed children in real life, his you should either have, I believe, an upper lip and no lower lip, or a full lower lip and no upper lip, or sometimes for very occasionally a tiny little part on your upper lip and lower lip so it looks like a kiss. But you don't have the mouth circled in color. It's a very obtrusive, it's a very offensive look. There's a terrible word for it in the clowning business, and it's not right. And he had that, and people that don't know what they're doing slap that on. That's not a clown, that's somebody who's just trying to look strange and they're accomplishing it. We touch emotions. We're different. We're special. And I mean, and not the way that my teacher used to call me special. I mean, we have a gift.
All right, let me grab some phone calls from listeners. It's Stacy in Canandaigua first. Go ahead, Stacy.
Hi. I have been listening to you guys discussing the art of clowning and how
there's nuances, and you have to learn how to read people and how to react and interact with them. And my daughter's really been struggling in her new school the past couple of years, and we are a fun-loving family. And I really feel that maybe learning how to be a clown would be something that she could really relate to, mm-hmm. and kind of might help her come out of her shell a little bit. How does a person get started in clowning?
How old is she?
She's 10.
It's a good age to start learning any of the skills of clowning, which your friends will think are wonderful. There's a lot of simple magic tricks. There's a lot of simple juggling tricks that you can pick up on in stores and things. And if she can feel comfortable with them, showing them to you, then you can tell her when it's time to share them with her friends. It may give her something to reach out and make that connection with.
Are there schools, though? Are there training programs? Sky, you mentioned going.
Well, I didn't do that in the city. I did. I went away for it. They sent me away.
But how many times?
Only once, but it was a long time.
Right. Right.
There are classes that sometimes the library offers, right. or the towns, the town of Greece, the town of Henrietta, Brighton. You look in their activities, and sometimes there's Clowning 101. These are great things to do. And also, I will give a shout out to my friends at Arlene's Costumes. And if you ask them at Arlene's, and right now they're busy because they're all over the city, but their main headquarters is located on
Portland Avenue.
Portland Avenue. They'll tell you if there's any kind of classes or anything going on, and that's a great idea.
Wonderful,
thank you.
Yeah. Go ahead,
Roscoe. And I ran classes for Damascus Shriners, and we brought a lot with my last 3 years with the Shriners over that we were doing circuses. I used to bring kids in eight or above, and we taught them how to do the basic clowning, makeup, balloon making, face painting, and juggling, and these kids got over their shyness.
All right, let me get back to the phones, and this is Susan in Lima. Go ahead, Susan.
Hi, I have been clowning for part-time for about 25 years, mostly parades because I work 7 days a week. When we're parading, you can always tell a kid that's afraid of clowns because their friends are trying to shove them into your face. So I pretend to just, like, I just turn away, or I may say something to the effect of, that's not very nice to your friend, and just keep on going, you know, quickly past them to give the friend a chance to escape. Are there any other suggestions?
You're doing basically the right thing. Try to avoid making contact with a person that's afraid of clowns. I see that all the time at the ball game, at different events I do, parades. Basically, is the person is trying to push the person afraid of a clown is personally, like you said, it's not a nice thing to do, okay? And if we can, we try to avoid making contact with a person that's afraid because we don't want to increase their fear, okay? If anything, we want to try to... I always like to put it where they push the person towards me, and then I talk to the individual that was afraid of a clown, and I actually turn them into a friend of a clown. And that actually defeats the purpose of the person that's trying to be, if you want to say, mean.
Okay. And thanks for the phone call, Susan. I had an email from a listener who wanted to know, said that they do have some fear of clowns, and they want to know if our guests are offended when people show fear. You mentioned, Richard, some of what's happened to you. Does that offend you when people show fear of clowns?
No, not at all. Whatever is going on in their lives is their life, and how do they want to attend to it as Abby did or live with it as is, it's their choice. It's fine. It may be a little sad that it happens to be what it is, but, you know, it's their choice in how to handle it, and I'm okay with whatever they choose.
Okay. Roscoe, any offense to
it? I have the same feeling as, you know, I recognize their fear, and I don't, if anything, I don't enhance it, and I give them their space. If they want to come to like me, I give them space to come approach me, maybe get a balloon. I do balloons like Richard does, and amazing, when you make a beautiful balloon for a young lady that's afraid of a clown, that balloon has a tendency to break the ice, and they become closer to you, and you can help work through their fears.
Okay, Sky?
they're dead to me. they don't like me. You know what? Them and their family just don't even ask me a thing over there. Hey, you know what? Everyone's got their own choices. And you can't, and I learned, I've been on this planet now for more than 4 years, and you can't please everybody, and you can't have everyone like you. Yeah. And even if I wasn't a clown, even as a regular person, I know that sometimes people are not going to like me. Oh, well, I wish them the best. And just, you know, turn up. And one of the rules for happiness, turn up your love, even if you're not getting it in return.
Yeah.
This is an interesting comment on Twitter from Liam. He says, it's a matter of context for me. And hearing John C. Reilly talk about clowning on Marc Maron's podcast was kind of heartbreaking. There's a real craft to it, but it's seemingly a dying art form, partly because there's this modern sense that clowns equal scary. That's from Liam. I didn't hear John C. Reilly, who I would love to hear on Marc Maron, so I will definitely seek that out. But Liam is saying that John was saying that, yeah, there's a craft to it, but he's worried that it's dying. Are you worried that it's dying?
There are a lot of people who get into clowning because they want to do something in their retirement, and they'll put on the makeup and they'll get a suit and they'll go out there and with low performance skills. And if you see them, you'll think, oh boy, the clown art is dying. But if you see us, you know, then you go, oh, these people really work at this. And there are people all over the world who really work hard.
And still.
And still, yeah. Yes. It depends on who you're looking at, you know, who you see.
Okay. Roscoe, thoughts on that?
I feel the same way. It's just basically our thing is when we go out there and perform, you do get the amateur throwing the makeup, try to go out and make a quick dollar. And then you get the ones like myself, Richard, that's been doing it for 25 years or more, and we master the craft, and we try to be the best we can at what we're doing, and we try to keep the clowning alive. I do see the decrease in the clowning, and it's a cycle. Everything runs a cycle, but I see it's going to come back once we get these scary movies disappearing, because what we're dealing with is the generation of the TV show It, raising kids, and again, you become the fear you inherit from your parents, okay? Yeah. If the parents has a fear of clown, the kids are going to have a fear of clowns until we can overcome that.
Okay, Sky?
I think that clowns are just wearing different faces now. I mean, like, for instance, I saw a clown the other day. I thought it was so funny. She dresses up and acts like a judge. And I, oh my gosh. Anyway, so what I really meant... Yeah. I had to get that out. Well, it's out. Like there was a guy on America's Got Talent, and he had a piece of tape over his face, and he wouldn't talk. And to some people, that looked kind of scary that he had a piece of tape over his face, and he was dressed kind of goth. But he didn't talk. He was lovable. He did a lot of shrugging of his shoulders. His eyes conveyed a lot of emotion. And to me, that was just another form of a clown.
He did some very sweet things.
Very yep. sweet. The clown is the court jester. The court jester used to have to perform not just to make you smile, but so that you didn't kill him. You
know, mm-hmm. Yeah, trust me, I'm a court jester.
Yeah, so and same here. It's a comic on stage.
It's actually historically true what Sky is saying.
Yeah, right? And yeah. On stage. So, you know, my goal is to raise everyone's zygomaticus junior and major, which are the big muscles in your face, and to get those pheromones and the hormones and the oh gosh, anything that moans in your body, just bring it up and make people feel good. It's a chemical reaction too. But yeah, I think there's always going to be a place for a clown. It just depends how you present it.
A couple more comments from Twitter, and then we'll grab another phone call. Joanna says, clowning sounds a lot like the type of play therapy we do in early intervention for kids on the autism spectrum. That's the power of play. Yeah. And then that kind of lines up with a lot of especially what Richard was talking about earlier, the way you can break down barriers with people. So that's from Joanna. Steve writes the program and just says, his issue with clowns is most clowns he sees are not very funny. And I think Richard was sort of endorsing that idea that there are clowns out there who aren't really trained and aren't that funny and probably don't do all of you guys very much justice. Abby is someone who is now no longer afraid of clowns, mm-hmm. but has coached some improv and works in that kind of a scene. If you're going to see clowns, you want them to be well-trained, don't you?
Yes. And I actually, hearing you all talk about what you do, I can make a lot of connections with the improv skills that we have to learn to be successful in that. So the woman who called about clowning classes, she could also do improv classes. I think that
would be a great idea.
It's a great way to open them up to being more open and less shy. But yeah, hearing what you guys are saying is taking my fear away even more, because I can relate on a performing level. For sure.
All right. Well, let's get a little pushback, though, from one of our listeners, Anne in Rochester. Go ahead, Anne.
Yes. Hi. It's a very interesting topic. And I should tell you that I've seen clowns that I think are delightful. But I'm sensing a bit of mixed messages in what your guests are talking about, which I think sometimes comes across in the way clowns interact with adults and children. It's sort of the sense of pushing too hard. I'm going to make you like me. That sooner or later, you're going to like me. One of your guests said something about if there are kids in the room that are afraid of clowns, I'll stick around and I'll be there until they like me. And another guest said, you have to really respect the space of other people and you don't get into their space. And yet somebody says, well, you know, the lady in the wheelchair, I just reached over and touched her nose and, you know, bonk, bonk with the squeaker. And I think that's really, that's going too far. And the idea that, I think it's a wonderful idea that people in wheelchairs, children in wheelchairs, should enjoy interacting with people. But I don't think they should be forced to encounter somebody that could really be scary. Children on the autism spectrum, adults on the autism spectrum, children or adults with cerebral palsy, with any kind of whole panoply of conditions that can make interacting with anybody a scary proposition. I think there's a sincere desire for sensitivity, and yet there seems to be kind of a not too thinly disguised disdain. The idea of saying, well, you know, I tried my best with her. She's over 18 and she can drive away. What the heck? And everybody laughs. So, you know, there's okay. Kind of this disdain, like, you know, if you don't like me, that's your problem.
Okay. Well, all right. And let's let them respond. I appreciate the phone call. Thank you, Anne. Richard, we'll start with you because you're the one who
I brought up both those events. Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
The woman who was I was making the balloon for, yes, I took it one step too far with her. I thought, you know, you use every bit of sensitivity you have to determine where someone is and whether they're going to accept what you're doing or not. She became so comfortable and everyone else around her became so comfortable that one little push that I couldn't get it off my finger was too much for her. And that's a really hard thing to tell. But everything else, like the woman in the wheelchair, try and imagine the sensitivity of deciding this person is someone I can walk toward when you just catch her peripherally, and then walking toward her and stopping that split second before she turns her head sideways. And then as I reached up and beat my nose, I'm watching her response to that, and her face, she kind of turned her head a little sideways is what? And I very gently just pointed to her with a look on my face as if, you know, what about you? And there's an incredible sensitivity that's required in doing this that perhaps isn't coming across on the radio right now, but it is.
You're not just all up in everyone's personal space
no,
all the time.
No.
And let me also say to Anne's point, I understand the point that Anne's making. She wants to make sure that you're not just invading personal space because you want the self-indulgent feedback that likes you. But Anne, I would just say, listening to Richard, listening to what Sky said earlier about the way some people are not often seen or the way people are ignored, if you think about the woman in the wheelchair that Richard described, she probably goes throughout her day, if we're being honest, mostly ignored by people.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a real risk to saying, well, everyone's going to be potentially afraid, or I'm not going to approach anybody, or I'm going to be especially judicious about not interacting with people who might have at first be a little standoffish, because they may be so used to Sky and people saying, you're not worth talking to.
Well, and if she's wearing a mask to begin with, because she's already frowning and she's angry and she's large in her wheelchair, she knows that she's trying to put up a wall. So I'm just saying, I want to say this. We are, and I know this sounds ridiculous.
I'm angry at myself for laughing at that.
Well,
go ahead.
We are professionals, okay? And when I say this, what I mean is, we know it's all different. We know when to approach the person and touch their nose. We should know when to say, you know what, I'm going to stick this out. I see the potential of them wanting to play with me. They're just not sure. They're ready to have a good time, but I can see it. I've done this enough times. It's knowing yourself. It's knowing your audience. It's doing this for a long time. So the person that you go over and touch their nose to do the squeak, you may not do with someone else. You know, of course, you've got to judge it out. And me, I am on the spectrum. I'm very sensitive to these things. It's just knowing your audience. And when I did say, you know, and they drive a car. Well, I mean, because it's just.
He was trying to make the point of the woman. She was an older old enough to drive.
Sure.
Yeah. She otherwise has a normal life.
Comedy is tough. Not everyone's going to understand where you're coming from or where it's supposed to be going. And I do appreciate and your observations on what we were talking about, too, because we are coming from all different directions.
All right, so we're out of time. I want you all to let our listeners know where to find you. So we're in about a minute. We've got to be quick here. Sky.
I promise. I'll be at the comedy club called Comedy at the Carlson tonight. 7:30 and 10 o'clock. I'll be featuring for another act and looking forward to it.
That's tonight. Comedy at the Carlson and tomorrow night. Sky Sands. Roscoe, the court jester.
I'm basically doing private shows because the Red Wings are done for the season, but you can reach me at 585-748-0933. 748-0933.
Thank you, Roscoe. Thank you for being here. Richard Houston.
At the Rochester Museum and Science Center tonight at their After Dark program. I'll be there with Ted and Ward as Flower City Vaudeville.
City Vaudeville, yes. If you want to see more about what they're doing. And Abby, people want to take and learn more about comedy real quick.
Yeah, we are performing in the late night comedy series at Blackfriars Theater. Our next show is in December, and we have comedy weekends throughout the year. So
awesome stuff. Thanks to all of you for being here.
Thank you, Evan.
An offbeat but very interesting way to end the week. And we need a smile and to think a little. And so thanks to all of you. Thanks to John Andrus, the engineer, Megan Max, the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice weekend. We're back with you Monday on Member Supported Public Radio.